It really is a joy to be back here today and sharing in this time with all of you. Thank you for the very warm welcome that you've offered me already. I just am deeply grateful for that. And as we come to this time of meditation, oftentimes, I don't know about you, sometimes I think, what's the relationship between prayer and meditation? And I find that they're very closely related. We can maybe call them cousins or things. And things about prayer in this tradition that might be new if you're newer to this tradition is we talk about praying the solution rather than the problem. And I think you might pick up on some of that as we pray. It's not begging and beseeching someone or something out there to give us something that we're lacking, but it's rather a return to something that's already ours. And meditation is, I see it as in service of prayer and coming back to something that already is. And so the invitation is for all of us to return to the peace that's already inside. And again, peace is not something to go out there and try to get or to try to ask for, but to just come back to. And so I would invite you to just take a moment and take a few nice deep breaths. And if it's comfortable for you, just allow your eyes to close or maybe to gaze downward in a soft focus. Just take a moment to notice the experience of breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. Maybe noticing that you're here, seated in a chair, your feet on the floor, being supported by the chair, held to the earth by gravity. And just doing a gentle scan of your body. Are there any areas of tension or sensation that just need your loving awareness and presence? And directing some of that loving attention and presence to those places. And maybe turning your attention now inside. What thoughts, what feelings are here today? Can you simply witness them and accept them? It's been said that peace is this present moment without judgment. So can you accept this moment simply for what it is? maybe just coming back to your breath. Maybe noticing not so much how you are breathing life in the universe, but maybe how life in the universe is breathing you. Maybe noticing the space between the in-breath and the out-breath, those moments of stillness are your moments of peace. Can you touch that? Just ending with this poem, The Peace of Wild Things by Wendell Berry. Just invite you to let the words wash over you this morning. Despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my children's lives may be. I go and lie down where the wood drake rests his breath on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things, who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars, waiting with their light. For time I rest in the grace of the world and am free. For a time I rest in the grace of the world and am free. And just taking a few nice, easy breaths. And allowing your eyes to open and come back to the room.
Sacred love, sacred love.
Thank you. I'm not going to lie, you know, coming here and being ready to speak and everything is great. And then when I hear, you know, James Crest, ministerial candidate, all of you got forms you're filling out, evaluating how I'm doing. I'm thinking, James, don't screw this up, you know. don't do this up, you know. Just so you know, people who wear these little microphone things have insecurities and fears inside themselves too. But assuages some of that fear and insecurity is the sense of love and welcome that I have felt here and have felt in Coeur d'Alene in the about 4 to 5 months that I've been coming here and spending time with my beloved partner Lisa, who's here today with her mother and some friends. It's just so nice that they're here, and I am just so grateful for that. But it truly is nice to be here. And what I want to share with you, the title of my message today is The Sacred Truth of Belonging. The sacred truth of belonging. And when I think of belonging, I think it really starts with location. You know, where do you live or whatever? And author Victoria Lures, who's written a book called Wild Church, and it's about seeing the divine in nature and everything. One of the things she asks people she interviews on her podcast is, tell me about the land who raised you. Tell me about the land who raised you. So I'm going to take a little risk here and ask that you would indulge me about a little less than 3 minutes of a kind of a corny song that will help you understand a little bit about the land that raised me. As Dennis mentioned, I lived in Seattle for 53 years. And I was born in Wisconsin, so I'm a cheesehead, but I've spent most of my living years here. And as I've gotten to know Coeur d'Alene, I just appreciate the beauty of this place. Even this morning, just getting out and smelling the cleanness of the air and the freshness of the air. I was in Georgia last week with my daughter, and it was, you know, 92, 93 degrees with 70% humidity, and it was, you know, it's just something. And there's just something about the beauty here, and it kind of reminds me of the beauty of Seattle. And so what I'd like to do is just play a video for you that's, again, just a little bit less than 3 minutes. It's a song sung by Perry Como. Whenever the bluest skies you've ever seen are in Seattle, have you ever seen that? Yeah. If you haven't, yeah, it's just when I see blue skies, my parents played that song in the car after we moved to Seattle from Wisconsin, so it just reminds me of that. But this will give you a little picture of the land from which I come, okay? So let's watch it together.
The bluest skies you've ever seen are in Seattle, and the hills the greenest green in Seattle. Like a beautiful child growing up free and wild, full of hopes and full of fears, full of laughter, full of tears, full of dreams to last the years in Seattle, in Seattle. When it's time to leave your home and your loved ones, it's the hardest thing a boy can ever do. And you pray that you will find someone warm and sweet and kind, but you're not sure what's waiting there for you. The bluest skies you've ever seen are in Seattle, and the hills the greenest green in Seattle. Like a beautiful child growing yep. up free and wild, full of hopes and full of fears, full of laughter, full of tears, full of dreams to last the years in Seattle, in Seattle. When you find your own true love, you will know it by her smile, by the look in her eye. Scent of pine trees in the air, never knew a day so fair. It makes you feel so proud that you could cry. The bluest sky you've ever seen are in Seattle, and the hills the greenest green meet in Seattle. Like a beautiful child growing up free and wild, full of hopes and full of dreams, full of laughter, full of tears, full of dreams to last the years in Seattle. In Seattle. In Seattle. In Seattle.
Thank you. Thank you for just indulging me a few minutes there to just see a little bit about the place that's been home for me for many, many years. But coming back to this idea of, again, belonging, and what does it mean to belong? You know, take in the beauty of this place. Take in the beauty of the beings that are here. I understand the last time I spoke here, there was a deer that was out in the back. Yeah, I didn't know. I saw people smiling, and I didn't know if, like, that I have something in my teeth or there was a hair out of place or something like that. But I just think that's so cool. I just absolutely love that. But as we start to think about belonging, I want to think a little bit more about beyond just our place and our location and everything, but the inner experience of belonging and what it's like. And to sort of start talking about this, well, actually, before I do that, when we talk about belonging, we can also think about it as homecoming. And when I was in Georgia last week, I was driving around and I just saw this home. I don't know if you can see the sign here, but it's welcome home. And I don't know who was being welcomed home, but that feels good, doesn't it? You know, to have a homecoming like that. And I just thought that was very special. But to just kind of get our thoughts going here today, Maya Angelou said this. She said, "You are free only when you realize you belong no place. You belong every place, no place at all. The price is high and the reward is great." And I thought that's helpful because I don't know about you, but in my experience of life, I've had experiences of feeling like I belong and I'm here, and times where it's like I wonder, how do I fit in here? Does anybody know me, care about me? And there's just a lot to that. With the help of ChatGPT, and I just used a little bit, I'm developing a relationship with ChatGPT, the etymology of the word belonging has Middle English and Germanic roots from the prefix be, which means about or around thoroughly, and then long from the word langien, which means to pertain to or to long for. And so if we were to put all of that together, the word belong can be thought of as to be properly related to be connected with, and to have a rightful place with or in. And so my intention for today is to awaken compassion for the longing to belong, particularly your longing to belong. And the reason for that is because if we can become more compassionate, more aware, and more compassionate with ourselves about our experience of belonging, we can do what we say this church is all about, which is living love and uplifting lives from that honest place. Because when we're not aware of our experience, or when we don't have compassion on ourselves, oftentimes that lack of belonging can be projected or transferred onto someone or something else in the form of the color of their skin, political orientation, sexual orientation, all those kinds of things. But I've noticed in myself that when I am able to speak from that experience or have others speak from their experience, connection happens. And as we've said at the beginning of the service today, we're like it or not, we're all connected. There may be people in your life who's like, I don't want to be connected to that person. Well, I just would like to remind all of us that in one way, shape, or form, we are all connected to each other. And so I would invite you, as we think about this, to reflect on just your own experience of belonging, starting with your ancestors. We all have them. Maybe your family of origin, your school, your friends, your neighborhood, your community, clubs, sports teams, your close relationships, partners, and spouses. What has your experience of belonging been like? Consider your joys. What lights you up? What inspires you? What sparks laughter and joy? What sparks peace and stillness? What sparks pain and struggle? Maybe, just maybe, as you think about belonging and where your life's journey has taken you, there could be a shift from what do I want from life, what do I want from others, what do I want from a place, to what does life want from me? What do others want from me? What does God, the divine, the sacred, want from me? So I'll just offer you the answer here. What is the sacred truth of belonging? I would offer this. The sacred truth of belonging is I belong right here, right now, just as I am, just because I am. I belong here, now, just as I am, just because I am. You can take that with you from today and tune out the rest of what I'm going to say and or shop Amazon or Facebook or whatever you want to do. But that's the answer I'd like to offer, and then just a few reflections around it. Author Richard Rohr says that the only thing that separates us is the belief that we're separated. And in the life and the teachings of Jesus, his life was all about showing us that sense of connection. And the only thing that Jesus excluded was exclusion itself. Some of the stories and some of the parables that he told really illustrate that. He told the story of Samaritan woman who he talked to, and in those days people didn't talk to Samaritans. They were the other people. They were the outsiders. And Jesus went across the way, across the city, crossing cultural lines to engage this woman and welcome her into the fold. Another story that comes to mind is Jesus told the story of a landowner who hired people to come work in his field. Some workers started at 9 in the morning, some started at noon, some started at 3, some started at 6. And when it came time for payday, you know what? Everybody got paid the same. Now, Jesus' point in telling these stories is not to set up an economic system, but these are stories that kind of jar the ego. And they kind of disturb a little bit. And they've been used, I think, in my evangelical traditions in many ways to kind of beat people up over the head, to sort of get people to believe certain things about Jesus, and that's not the point. It's about coming back to the reality of what it means to live with grace, to live in love, to live in connection. It really is belonging all about the experience of love. And love is an intelligence that seeks expression. You and I are expressions of that love that is coming through us. And love is not something that is controlled. Love is not something that is manipulated. Love is not something that is possessed. Love is simply an invitation to presence. And when we are present with the present moment, we belong first and foremost to ourselves. And the more we belong to ourselves, the more we can belong to each other. How do movements of love and belonging evolve or devolve? And again, I think about this a lot, just from the Christian experience, but in the early days of the Christ movement, and I'm talking about pre-4th century, these communities of love, these pockets of love, were people who had what came to be known as supper clubs. People who gathered together for meals to love and encourage each other. There was nothing that was centralized. There was nothing that was formalized. There was no hierarchical structure. There was just kind of these loose bands of people that were going around practicing this radical love that was turning this world upside down. The early followers of Christ were persecuted in many ways because in those days, Caesar, the person in charge, was equated to divinity. And these people just very politely said, no, we're not going to worship that person as divine. We march to the beat of a different drum. That drum is love. Well, in the 4th century, the leadership of the Holy Roman Empire decided, hey, let's make this Christ movement sort of the official religion of the land. Let's end all this persecution. And you think that would be the beginning of this movement's finest hour. Well, history shows us that it wasn't. When love meets power and dominion, you get what's known as the medieval Holy Catholic Church. And you get popes coronating kings, money and power into the equation, and things go sideways. Now, it's easy to look back on that period of history and go, yeah, how can that happen? But I think it's more useful to look at what happened then and ask, what is the now of then in my life? Where are those areas in my life where I'm maybe experiencing a little bit of discomfort or whatever? Let me put it to you this way. How do movements of love, or even in relationships, harden and ossify and lose their organicity and their love? I think it's because the human mind and the human experience wants two things: clarity and stability. How many of you in here would like a little more clarity and a little bit more stability? I would. I would. Yes, I do. I don't like it. I'm in a period of life. I'm 58 years old. If you're into astrology, that's known as a period of a Saturn return, which is a lot of just turbulence and upsettling. You know, I'm ready to settle down and not have any more fogginess or clarity in my life. That's a function of the mind, and that's okay. But the language of the mind is logic and reason and wants this. The language of the heart is love and new. And so, the point is not to fight with these, to fight with each other of these, or to pathologize, or to make that desire for clarity and stability wrong. No, it's human. The point is to be able to recognize it and to know when that's happening and to hold that in love and compassion. And as we've been singing about this morning, keep your heart open. Can you receive this present moment with faith, with love, with trust? That's when really, really cool things happen. Just tell you, just a couple stories to sort of just bring this up, bring this to bear. It really is amazing how things happen. My experience of being welcomed here in Coeur d'Alene has been wonderful. And I've also met some people who, you know, they tell you that you're from Seattle, and it's like, uh-oh. Why would you come here? Yeah. And I've had people say, you know, if you come here, you know, would you fit in here? And of course I will. I mean, and that's usually in the context of, like, you put an Idaho license plate on your car or something like that. Of course, you know. First of all, I can't change this place any more than anybody else can. You know, all I can do is just show up and be me. But I think the last time I spoke here, it was the day that the two firefighters were killed in the line of duty. And I think it was a couple days after that, just by accident, I stumbled upon the parade on Sherman Avenue when they were bringing the bodies back. I was just so moved. I just wept. I just, to see the community come out in support of our firefighters and the loss of life, the whole moment just moved me, and I just broke. I just cried. And this gentleman that was standing there with his son, we got talking to each other, and he saw me pull up in my car with my Washington license plates, and we just got talking. And he said, "Yeah, you're from Seattle." "Yeah, I'm from Seattle." And there was just some, "Okay, what are you doing here?" Whatever. But then, in the course of our conversation, this person told me a story for about 45 minutes. He just went on. When he found out I was a minister, I guess I opened the door. But he told me a story of a mystical experience he had 2.5 years ago walking the streets of this town, where they had a heart attack and had an out-of-body experience where Jesus showed up and just were watching people work on him. And when their church prayed, he came back to life. But the point of the story was that this person told me through tears that this was a story that they didn't feel comfortable sharing in their own spiritual community because of being thought of as weird or out there or whatever. And all I could say was how sad. First of all, I said, thank you for trusting me with that story. And those stories and those experiences are important. I think last time I was here, somebody asked me if I was a Seahawks fan. And the answer is, I follow them from a distance. A few years ago, I was a Seahawks fan because I'm a Pete Carroll fan, the coach of the Seahawks. I know, Pete Carroll, I know. And I was in Seattle when Pete came and they won the Super Bowl and whatever. But it's a fascinating story of the Seahawks, because in those days it was a team of misfits: Russell Wilson, Marshawn Lynch, Richard Sherman, you know, these guys who were kind of kind of after picks in the draft, you know, come on to Pete Carroll's team. And one of the things that Pete Carroll said, and it's quoted in Brené Brown's book, Dare to Lead, but Pete Carroll said this, a strong leader pulls people to a deep belief in themselves. A strong leader pulls people to a deep belief in themselves. In other words, Pete Carroll didn't take this group of people and try to form fit them all into this one-size-fits-all experience of what does it mean to be a football player. But through the unique skills that he had as a coach, he could know what it is that lit people up and direct them toward that inner passion and that inner drive toward where individually and collectively as a team, they overachieved. And I got to tell you, it was a thrill. The year they won the Super Bowl, I mean, it was just like, wow. It was really cool to be a part of that. But that's, again, what I think about the experience of love and belonging and coming back to this idea that you belong here just because you are, just as you are. So how can this be in your life? I want to just very, very quickly, and I'm going to go fast because we're short on time here, but I'd like to offer you five things that you can take away here to help you navigate the experience of belonging or not belonging in your life. Okay, let's see if these come through here on the slide. All right. The first one is this. Practice silence and solitude. Silence and solitude. Silence and solitude is really hard to find in this day and age, especially with these devices here. Yeah. And I love them. I'm very pro-technology and everything, so I'm not here to bash cell phones, but I would just invite you to take maybe a morning, or if you're really gutsy, maybe a day, and put this thing on silent and just notice your experience with it. Or if you can't do that, silence the alarms and the beeps on it, you know, every time you get a message or whatever. Why is that? Because I think these phones give us an illusion of being connected, but not really. And so what you can do by taking it out of your life and just coming back to yourself, you can, again, just connect to your own experience of belonging and what's important to you. And, it's just so important. And I'm saying this as someone who's got a 6-year-old grandson. He loves video games. He taught me how to play Minecraft. I have no idea how to play Minecraft. He schooled me on it, a 6-year-old, you know. It was funny, I noticed myself saying, I don't want to just connect over, you know, video games. Can we go swimming? Can we read books and all that kind of stuff? Which we did, and we had the joy of being able to connect both video games and swimming and going out in the park and doing things. But this idea of fasting and taking a break from the incessant drive to always be doing something is what's important. Remember this, solitude is an experience. Loneliness is meaning. Solitude is an experience. Loneliness is the meaning that your mind makes of that experience of solitude. And so just notice how that works out in your life. And I think what that will do is will strengthen your ability to belong to yourself. Second, own your experience. Own your experience. We've talked about this a little bit before, but it's to be able to speak from your experience or on behalf of your experience and to know what it is that you love, what you desire, what you fear, what you're anxious about. When we do that, we, again, stop projecting our experience and blaming other people or other things for what we're in. Third, and this kind of flows from that, in your interactions, discern impact from intent. Impact from intent. Oftentimes, what creates illusions of separation is you'll say something or do something, or someone else will say or do something to you, and it'll impact you in a certain way that's different than how it was intended. Has that ever happened to you? I do it all the time. I do and I say things, and I'm sure there are probably things that I say in this message that impact you in ways that they're not intended. The impact that it has on you is important because it reveals to you what's important to you. So speak from that. But if you're on the receiving end of that, if someone comes up to you and says, hey, when you said this, when you did this, it impacted me such and such a way. Again, I don't know about you, but my default response is, that's not what I meant. You know, I meant it this way. Try to not do that and instead say, thank you for telling me. Tell me more. And allow the individual, if there's safety there or whatever, to tell you what the impact of your actions or your words had on them. The reverse is true. If someone says or does something to you that's hurtful or harmful, play with the courage of being able to say, hey, when you said this or when you did this, here's how it impacted me. And I'm telling you, I care about our connection. I care about our relationship. It doesn't always go well. Again, it's about setting an intention and releasing attachment to any kind of outcome. You know, it's trusting life and the universe for what that outcome is. But if you get better at that, that will help you with your experience of belonging. Number four, create space for fear and grief. Create space for fear and grief. I think in our culture, in America, generally speaking, we are losing the ability and the capacity to grieve. I've even heard it said in circles like this that, you know, watch for the energies of fear and watch for the energies of grief because they're low energy, you know, and we've got to raise our energy and stay on a high vibration, you know. I get all of that, but I think sometimes, oftentimes, maybe more often than we think, the pathway to that higher vibration of joy and peace is through the experience of grief, through the experience of fear. And my invitation to you is if you experience grief, to allow all the time and all the space for that grief to be there. Now, somebody will say, hey, wait a minute, in these teachings, are we supposed to allow grief and all this kind of stuff to overwhelm us and get stuck in some kind of loop? The best picture I can offer you is this. Think of your emotional experience as bird watching. I like that. I'm not a big bird watcher, but think about when you watch birds. What do? You simply watch them. You're not necessarily trying to go out and capture them. You're not simply trying to go out and to try to change them. You're not going out and trying to maybe move them to a different place. You're just watching how they behave. I like watching hummingbirds. They're just fascinating, fascinating. But think of your emotional experiences of grief in doing that. And one side note I'd put on here, it's not on the slide, but as you experience fear and grief, welcome forgiveness in your life. We talk a lot about offering forgiveness. That's important. But my invitation here is to notice what's your experience of receiving forgiveness. And let me just offer this experience of forgiveness. Forgiveness is oftentimes thought of as the absolution or the reconciling of a hurt or a wrongdoing, meaning that there was a perpetrator and there was a victim. And that's certainly a part of our experience. But the more I study the teachings of Jesus and other traditions, I'm thinking of forgiveness not so much as the absolution of guilt, but a return to innocence. A return to innocence. That comes from a very deep belief that I have in the fundamental goodness of every single human being. I spent 28 years, more than that, as a Catholic, before we did that, of a tradition that says people are fundamentally bad. And because they're bad, God had to do something horrific to pay the price for that. I believe that is a distortion of the teaching of Jesus. If you're here and you were raised with that and that's a part of your tradition, I'm not here to pathologize it or make it wrong, but to simply see if you can be open to considering the fact that before there was bad in the world, you were fundamentally good. And the Bible said God created everything, and after everything, he said what? It was, yeah. There was one thing God said was not good. Do you remember what that was? That the man should not be alone. That's another message for another time. Okay, but it comes back to this idea again of the fundamental goodness and love of everything that's in there. So do that. The last thing, share stories. Share stories. Share stories of your life. Share stories of what makes you happy, what makes you sad. I have so many more that I can share with you, and as time goes on, look forward to sharing more of those. But. Share stories, because stories, again, talk about what's important to you and what matters to you. I'd like to conclude today by just reading a poem to you For Belonging by John O'Donohue.
And again, I would just invite you in these moments that are here to, again, let the words read you. Don't try to necessarily understand them, but let the understanding come to you as we think about belonging. This is by John O'Donohue.
May you listen to your longing to be free. May the frames of your belonging be generous enough for your dreams. May you arise each day with a voice of blessing, whispering in your heart. May you find harmony between your soul and your life. May the sanctuary of your soul never become haunted. May you know the eternal longing that lives at the heart of time. May there be kindness in your gaze when you look within. May you never place walls between the light and yourself. May you allow the wild beauty of the invisible world to gather you, mind you, and embrace you in belonging. Amen. And so it is. Thank you.
Thank you, James. Beautiful message. This is a song for a beautiful day. Thank you.